Is going on, folks? Will Turba here. Fake Mike, real news. Yes, you're tuned into the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show, normally hosted by V. Normally we'd have the first 5 or 10 minutes trying to get every single landline, his 3 internet connections, his Skype connected, but nope, not today. He actually is taking a night off, proving in fact that he is not robotic or a reptoid. He actually has to rest. This guy does so much work behind the scenes, so go check out his work after the show. But we're gonna have a really cool show tonight too. I've got an amazing guest, and we have a lot to talk about, and I'm definitely gonna open it up for calls, but we're gonna dedicate a lot of time to our guest, and we're gonna keep the calls tonight strictly to the topic. So much love to some of our callers out there, but we're gonna keep it to topic today. And yeah, our guest tonight is Chili DeCastro. He's a TV and Hollywood producer. He's got, I believe, over 400 credits, but this guy is not one of your typical Hollywood producers where he has pedos and casting couch around. He's actually doing something quite different. So, Chili, you there with us, brother?
I am. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Hello, everybody, to everybody's listening.
Yeah, so let's start. Firstly, let's learn a little bit about you and how this project came to be, because you're dropping a really dope project coming, which is like, it's not just one project, it's like several projects built in one, and it's a game changer. It's a game changer if people get behind this. And well, I want to ask you a few questions about some specifics later, but let's start about your origin and your history and who you are.
Sure. Well, my legal name is Jose Maria. I was raised in an all white town in Alaska, and I was raised fairly no black people, so it was fairly racist. Not actual racism where we would see black people and want to beat them up, but I was raised fairly, you know, in a white roughneck town. So my name got Chili because my friends called me Chili Taco. And then my first job in the real world, my boss put Chili on my business cards. And so about 20 years ago, 19 years ago or so, what happened was a guy named Michael Moore, who's the current chief of police, no-knock raided my apartment. He did it twice in the same month. Now, you know, I have a lot of people in my life, and I don't want to open up old wounds, but I had been involved with somebody who had an ex-husband, and she moved across the country to get away from him. And then he came here, confronted us out at an event, and I told him, I'll put you on the ground, beat you up right here in front of everybody. And then he figured since he couldn't fight me, he would tell the police that I was a drug dealer. So they kicked my door down the first time, and I had no idea what was going on. And they said, you know, where are the pills? And I said, you're in the wrong house, dude. You've raided the wrong house. And they're like, you know, we're looking for Mr. DeCastro. Are you Mr. DeCastro? I said, I'm him, but how can I help you? You're in the wrong place. And they said, you know, we got this warrant and kids are dying. So I told them absolutely everything I could about a chemical called GHB. They had just criminalized it the year before. I told them every single thing I could. Remember, I'm open, I'm loving, I have a zillion friends, and I'm this really gregarious, open guy. You know, I got to Hollywood, and I made all these buddies and all these friends. It was so great. So I was really an open human being at that time. And when he kicked my door down the first time, they showed me pictures of them following me around for a month, showed me pictures of me going to events with this girl that I was with friends. And so they took my computers and my phone, and I figured, I mean, I talked to them for an hour. I told them absolutely everything I could because they told me kids were dying. I was very naive that everything would be used against me. So then, you know, I told them, look, if you have any more questions, don't kick my door down again. Just call me. I'll come help you out. They kicked my door down a month later. And this time they arrested me and they charged me with 5 felonies because I told them the truth. And the truth was that I had nothing to do with being a drug dealer, but yeah, I use this chemical. It's good for my body, you know, all these things. So that every word I said was a felony. So they charged me 5 felonies. I hired a guy named Robert Shapiro, who used to represent a guy named OJ in the 90s. He represented me.
Oh, wow.
And we
whoa.
Yeah.
So you hired Shapiro. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it was my first year in Hollywood, and I had booked Power Rangers. I had booked Pepsi. I had booked Ski-Doo. I did a Pepsi commercial with Britney Spears. I had booked all these different things my first year because I was just so open and so happy. And I had $120,000 saved up. And Shapiro cost 55 off the top. And then there was professional witnesses and experts and hearings. And so what made me the way I am was that event. But that not just that event. What made me the way I am was the legal proceeding that they put me through. And the hooks and levers and valleys and pitfalls that they purposely walked me through to try to put my brown skin in jail. Now, I look white. But when they took me into jail, the second time they no-knock raided me, they had a full SWAT team with Uzis and, you know, AK-47s, whatever those guns are. You know, I'm a huge Second Amendment guy, but I don't carry a gun around. You know, so they had all these guns on me with lasers. It was 5 o'clock in the morning. And then they took me in, and the prosecuting attorney said that, Your Honor, he's Colombian. And so we need to make sure that he's not going to be a flight risk. So they put my bail at $2.5 million. I had possession.
Are you Colombian born or Colombian American?
No, I was born in California, went to Colombia till I was almost three. And then we moved back to the States because my mom wanted to make sure I was born in the same hospital she was born in Linwood, California. And then we went to Colombia for a couple years. Obviously, my mom and dad weren't working out. So we came back. And then by the time I was five, we moved to Alaska. And I never left Alaska again until I was 18. So, it was just
interrupt again, but had this event not occurred, what would you foresee yourself doing at this moment? Had this not occurred to you, what was the trajectory before this?
I would have been a movie star actor because I was already working and I didn't have any training. I hadn't graduated from Meisner, Sanslowski, Uta Hagen. You know, I really, when I dig into something, I dig into it all the way. I went to Strasbourg. You know, my favorite, Stella Adler. And I learned all these different techniques of acting. But the problem was after I had booked all these things my first year here, I then found out that I couldn't go on a set without telling them that I was under felony indictment. Because if I did, then I was committing fraud. And if I booked the role, wow, and I went on Fox or Universal or wherever, they could be sued and I would be liable. And I would ruin my, so pretty much for 2 years, as I went through the diversion program of having a possession charge, because this is what made me a legal expert, by the way. This is what made me the legal expert I am today, because I had to find out what was going on with my trial. I'm being charged with five felonies. Do we have time for me to tell you the real screw you?
We have 2 hours, so please get into details. I mean, I got
okay.
Probably won't get to, but please flesh it out, because honestly, I was so just as a quick side note, we're gonna get back to our guests and give them the floor. But I just recently was introduced to this gentleman through Auditing America, so make sure you go over there as always, like, share, and subscribe to that channel. And Mr. America was telling me, "Yo, Will, you need to check this dude out because he's just like you, only 100 times more smarter and more organized." So, yeah, please get back into the details because we got plenty of time here, brother.
So what made me really, really angry was the process. I went to the arraignment right away. I'm standing in this place. They raid my house at 5 in the morning. I'm in L.A. County, Twin Towers, by 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, right? I'm before a judge. I'm still in handcuffs. I'm shackled from head to toe. And the DA, the assistant DA, says that I'm a flight risk, so they put my bail at $2.5 million. Kyle Rittenhouse's bail was $2 million, and he had killed people. So mine was $2.5 million, and I had a possession charge. I had enough evidence of a possession, tops. That's it, total. So, you know, I'm not bagging anybody. I'm just saying that, you know, my bail shouldn't have been $2.5 million, but they did it specifically because I'm Colombian. That then pushed me further to my roots. And then I called my Colombian family and said, we need to get together. And I became very tight with my family in Colombia, which I had never been before. And so then here's the part that just really, I hope I don't cry, but made me so mad. So I'm in jail, right? I've got money and I've got an amazing partner out there who's going to make sure that she fights to get me out of this place. So I write her a check for $50,000 when they arrest me. And I say, get the best lawyer you can find and get me out of here. So first day, second day in America, you can be arraigned right away within 24 hours, 24, 48 hours. You're in front of the judge being arraigned. But I don't have an attorney, and I've never been through a felonious process here. So I every time you leave the jail, they shackle you like you're a hog. They put shackles on your ankles, on your wrists. They shackle you to three other guys, and they put you in a bus, and they shackle you inside that bus, that little section of four people. And so what really, really got me was the third time I had gone to arraignment. You know, they said, you do have a right to a speedy trial. You have a right to plead guilty, not guilty, or no contest right now. What do you want to do? And I said, I don't have my attorney here yet, so I'm going to waive my right to a speedy trial. But the judge knows what's going on. He knows I'm getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, being shackled to get to him before 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. This is a horrible process, disgusting and horrible. So I get there. The lawyer comes in the third day after that, and my ex-girlfriend had hired an ex-cop. And he comes in, and she'd given him 20 grand, and he said he looked at the charges, and he walks in. The first thing he says to me is, he said, "I looked at the charges. You're going to have to do a little time on this one." I said, "You're fired. Get out. Get out." And he said, I said, no. You started off with, "I'm going to do some time. Get out." Okay, I kick him out. I then go to the payphone. I'm crying. "You got to get somebody in here, baby." You know, day four, I go to arraignment again. The judge knows what's going on, that I got shackled at 3 a.m. and they have set me up. They have set me up to make sure that I stay in jail so that prison guards can make money off my skin being in jail. And so they say, "Do you want to plead guilty, not guilty?" And I say, "Your Honor, I don't have my lawyer here. I'm just going to waive my right till my attorney shows up." And then the guy, public defender, goes, "Well, you know, Your Honor, I'm here today. I'm a public defender. I'd be happy to arraign Mr. DeCastro, and we can just move forward with the procedure." And the judge says, "Mr. DeCastro, would you like him to arraign you? You're going to plead not guilty anyway, aren't you? So if you're going to plead not guilty, then you don't got to get up at 3 a.m. and go through this process. Just go ahead and let him arraign you." And the public defender goes, "Yeah, I can just go ahead and plead for you right now, and it'll be a one-time thing, no charge. I'll just do it, and I'm gone." I look at them both, and I go, "You know, hey, fellas, no offense, but I don't know you, and I certainly don't know you. I didn't ask to be here. You don't represent me. I don't know you. And I don't know you either. So I'm going to wait till my lawyer gets here, right? So I'm going to waive my right to a speedy trial. I'd like to go back to jail." The next day, Robert Shapiro comes in. Now, when this guy walks in, he's royalty. I mean, they bow down. I mean, it's crazy. You've seen someone kiss ass before around people. This is amazing. Judges, bailiffs, lawyers, everybody just bows, okay? So Shapiro comes in and says, "I'm here to represent Mr. DeCastro." And they go, "Okay, how would you like to plead?" And he goes, "Well, before we plead, I'd like to do a bail hearing." And then the judge goes, "Well, you know, the previous judge set the bail, so I can't do anything about that unless there's new evidence to enter into plea." And Shapiro says, "I have new evidence to enter." He goes, "Okay, then let's set a bail hearing at 2 o'clock today." It's 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning. So Shapiro's office is in the Valley, and we're downtown LA. He looks at me and he goes, "Look, I can't drive back to the Valley, so let's just go back to the visitor room and I'll talk with you for a few hours and get to know you." I go, "Great," because we've only had a 5-minute conversation before that. I go to the little room and I sit with him and I go, "So, you know, what was that bail hearing thing you just did?" And he goes, "Well, if you enter a plea before you have a bail hearing, then it's one of those like ancient locks that has the pendulum and clunk, clunk, and the teeth won't let it go backwards. That's the legal system." He said, "If you had entered a guilty, not guilty, or no contest, your bail would be locked at $2.5 million. And I said, "Excuse me?" And I said, "The judge tried to get me to plead, and so did the public defender." He said, "Of course they did. They all make money from you being in here." And I was like, okay. And then I really was mad. I was really upset. So then we go in, and he says, "I want to have a bail hearing." And they go, "What's the new evidence?" And he goes, "Well, Your Honor," he goes, "my client was no-knock raided 29 days ago. You came back to the same apartment, and he was asleep in his bed with his girlfriend, his common-law wife. They've been together for more than 5 years and cohabitated. You tell me, in your history of being a judge, how many drug dealers get no-knock raided, and then a month later they're in the same place sleeping with their girlfriend?" Just like that. Bail reduced, minimum. Just like that. Because it was, the whole thing was a scam. The whole thing was a scam. But then I learned the very specifics of court, what I would be expect to be seeing for the next several months. And I found out the exact procedures of what I would be facing. They have 10 attempts to convict me after they bring their witnesses. If a witness doesn't show, they have 10 attempts to bring that witness in. And so this is going to take months. And the first couple hearings, Shapiro immediately gets 2 felonies knocked off. Go back to the little room, right? And now I know the DA has 10 chances to try to get me to make a plea agreement. Literally, that's the rules. You're charged with a crime. They have 10 chances to make a deal with you. Then after that, you're done. So by the second or third deal, because I know the process now because I researched it, the DA comes back, right? And I look at him and I go, "You are my mortal enemy. Anything you offer me is poison." He looks at me and goes, okay, so no deal. And then he comes back in like the sixth or seventh time. They come back with like a year probation, 6 months in jail. I look at Shapiro. He looks at me and I said, Shapiro, I said, is this why I hired you? You going to put me in jail? And he goes, hold on, you're right. No deal.
Before you get there, why do they, what's the psychology behind them not wanting this to go to trial? Why do they want you to get a deal? It's so they can get you in jail or on probation to make money off you?
So here's the thing. If every person listening to this absolutely refused a plea bargain, it would overwhelm the judicial system and they would not be able to prosecute anybody. It would be, you would only be able to go after criminals, because the reason they make a plea deal with you is because you don't know the process and you're scared. Whereas if you take this, then it's a bird in the hand beats two in the bush. A bird in the hand is 6 months probation, 14 weeks of anger management, whatever, all the drug classes, whatever they want you to go through. It's all a bunch of bullshit. Doesn't matter what it, excuse my language. It's all a bunch of bull. All of it is bull. And they want you to jump through hoops, and it's a total, total scam. So then Chief Michael Moore gets on the stand. He's chief of police now of LAPD. And he gets on the stand and he lies right in front of me. He goes, we raided his house, right? Now, Shapiro is doing a rope-a-dope. He's setting him up to knock him unconscious. I didn't know that, okay? I'm used to seeing, like, court shows and lawyer shows, and right? So he gets up there, and he goes, how you doing? They all the process. And then they go, so, you know, Mr. DeCastro admitted to you that he was a drug dealer. He goes, yes, he did. He told me that he was selling drugs. I lost it. I stood up. I said, you're a liar. You're lying, right? Shapiro turns to me and says, sit down and shut up now. And if you ever burst out again, I will quit.
Wow.
The judge looks at me, looks at Shapiro, and he goes, okay, you got it. And so then what Shapiro does, he goes, so Mr. Moore, you tailed my client for some time? I did, yeah. And then you took pictures of where he went? I did. And then you took his computer and you took his phone in the first raid. And did you find any what's called pays and O's on there? No, we didn't find any pays and O's. Did you find any order list or any buyer list? No, we didn't. Okay, cool. So then you went to his house and you guys had guns and you had cameras and you guys recorded kicking down the door. Yes, we did. And then you recorded searching around his apartment. You did. And then you sat down, Mr. DeCastro, and you talked to him for an hour. Yeah, I did. And then you didn't record his confession. The whole courtroom went, oh. I mean, these guys are all people in jail, but you don't have to be smart to go, you recorded this, but then you did not record the confession. And then they, you know, Michael Moore, he's a real piece of garbage. If you ever see him talk on these Zoom things or Skypes that they did all this last year during COVID. So this is what, first of all, the public defender and the judge working in cahoots together, because my girlfriend and my friends could afford, and I could afford to come up with, you know, 20, 30, 40, even 50 grand to get me out of jail. But we could not afford to come up with a quarter million. 2.5 million would be 10%. It would be at least 25,000 minimum to get me out, maybe 50,000. And that would have ended my defense fund, because I wouldn't have had a fund, because I ended up spending $80,000 on my defense, completely wiped me out. And then the $80,000, I had a little more than 100. And then because I had taken a deal for a possession charge, and if I didn't take the possession charge, they were going to refile the felonies.
Here, Chili, we're going to our first commercial break. Stay tuned, guys. This is the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show. Chili DeCastro. This is fascinating, guys. Stay tuned. We're going to get into a lot more. We'll be right back after the short break.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Tuned into the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show. He has the night off. It's Fake Mike in the house. We have Chili DeCastro, Hollywood producer, and he's got a huge project coming up, and we're in our short little segment here. But Chili, please give us a brief recap and pick up where you left off, if you don't mind.
So the presentation is on June 19th. There's a bunch of people coming in, you know, Anselmo's coming in from Auditing America. And what I'm doing on June 19th is I'm giving a 6-hour dissertation. We're breaking up into 30-minute bits when I take turns talking with other people. And I've created an art display that is 30 feet long by 9 feet high that shows you exactly what this Supreme Court has done to America. And it's the most important presentation of my life. And it's the most important presentation of your life. Because if we do not change this, then we will live in a full tyrannical authoritarian state within a decade. And I'm not even kidding, not even joking. So that happens on June 19th. We want everybody to come in on Zoom, come in on Instagram Live, YouTube Live, come in on all your influencers, different channels. And it's a Q&A. So I'll do 30-minute dissertation, and then influencers will step in, and they'll say something. And then after that, I'll answer any questions. And then we'll have an ebook that you can get that's either free or 99 cents because I want you to learn these laws. I want you to learn what the Supreme Court is. I want you to learn that this is the tyranny in our country. Look at our Second Amendment right. Who did that? All Supreme Court. We never, ever, ever started with legislation. We started with judicial activism, and it's really disgusting. I'm going to go into great detail on that on June 19th. So I'm looking forward to meeting with all of you. Back to the story. So I get out of jail. It takes a year to beat the charges. Can't go on any castings, can't do anything. I'm in early 20s at this point. And so So then I start to piece it together because I just don't leave my apartment because I have to do an 18-month probationary period. So I just never leave my apartment because if you go out and you get in any kind of altercation, you're going to jail. And that means you've violated probation, and then I go to prison for 5 years. She gave me a 5-year prison sentence for possession and said, I'm going to suspend the 5-year sentence and give you 18 months of probation. And if you are seen by the police over that 18 months, understand, Chili, I will put you in jail for 5 years. So I just stayed in my apartment for 18 months. I just didn't leave. And what did I do? I started to study the law. And the case that got me was Illinois versus Gates. Illinois versus Gates is a 1983 case that supersedes a 1969 case called Spinelli versus United States. Now, the Spinelli case said that police had to have a two-pronged approach to confidential informant information. They had to both investigate the confidential informant and investigate the information before they would act on any sort of warrant. Well, that lasted from 69 to 83, and then the Berger Court overruled it with Illinois versus Gates, that they said the totality of the circumstances is enough for them to start an investigation and then even get a warrant. So what happened was when they followed me around, I was driving a Porsche, I had a bunch of friends and coming in and out of houses, and so automatically, hey, someone told us he's a drug dealer, and now he's driving around in a Porsche, he's got a bunch of friends, he must be a drug dealer. That's how they got a no-knock warrant for my house. Just like that. You know, but I would strongly urge you to revert to the Fourth Amendment and take a look at what it says. The Fourth Amendment says that they do not want police just raiding your house. It says, no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. What does that mean in 1789? That means that, you know, Will, you have pushed me to the limit, slept with my girlfriend, kicked my dog, stole my porridge, to the point where I got to go down and I got to file an actual oath and affirmation that Will has violated me to the point where I'm down here at the cop shop saying, help me. Because if you listen to different lecturers from Harvard or Princeton or Yale or Columbia, they'll tell you, all of them, ubiquitously, that the end of humanity is the government stick. Because Will and I should be able to work out our differences amicably as free men. The inhumanity comes when I can no longer have a cordial, advancing conversation with Will, and then I have to ask the government to help me. And that's the end of humanity. That's when humanity ends, is when the government gets involved, because they don't have a personality. It's government. So that's my story, and that's how I got to this point. And the reason why I'm on this talk show right now is to promote June 19th. And if you guys don't – so like when you think about the Supreme Court and you say –
We're coming up on another break in a minute or so too here. While the break's coming up, how can people find you to get in touch either via Zoom or Instagram and check out this project?
I have an Instagram account, and listen, Will's going to send out a link, and Salma's going to send out a link, Mr. Checkpoint, all these different people who are influencers are going to send out links, and you can hit up any influencer. It's on my Instagram. It's at Chili DeCastro, C-H-I-L-L-E. D.E. Castro. I only have one social media. I also have a Twitter account called Public Chill, P-U-B-L-I-C-C-H-I-L. I just opened it.
All right. Well, we're going to get that back again. We're coming up on this is our short segment. Coming up on our segment. We're going to get into it. Red Pill Hardcore Radio. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
For over 20 years now, Extendabite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Left the keys in the van, what he got in each hand. Went up in Eastland and shot a policeman. Fuck a peace plan, citizen bystands. The shit is in my hands, here's your lifespan. But what your life's worth, this money is twice then. Grab a couple grand and lay up a nice
land. We are back, I'm a nice man, ladies and gentlemen. And black, pop, trans, everybody, every human being, every reptoid, every blue avian. We are back. We've got Chili DeCastro, Hollywood producer here. Not a Hollywood producer in the typical sense where he makes terrible movies for China and India. No, actually, he's doing something that's going to change the world. So tell people about what this presentation is about. You got the book coming out. Then let's talk about that for a second. I'm really interested. I mean, maybe we could even start with Marbury versus Madison. I'm curious to see what you think about that. I have my own theory on that I'll probably lead with, and you can tell me what you think about that. But let's tell people about what you got going on, the 19th.
Okay.
Documentary, the book, how can they get that?
Absolutely. So the first thing I want to do real quick, if it's okay, is I want to clear up everything right here. Okay, so first of all, in the fight for civil liberties and for civil rights, there's no Republicans and there's no Democrats. There's no conservatives and there are no liberals. If you're a conservative in real life, you certainly are not a conservative Supreme Court guy. No way. Other than the Second Amendment, you do not support conservatives at the Supreme Court level. Trust me, and I'm going to go over that in a second. If you are a liberal or a Democrat, you do not align with liberal Supreme Court justices at all, unless you're against the Second Amendment. That's the only thing that stays the same. Everything else is different. Let me explain to you what I'm saying. So all conservatives listening right now, let me ask you a question. How many of you like that you can be arrested for any infraction of the law? And the ruling is this: if an officer sees you break the law of any infraction, you can be arrested and it's not a Fourth Amendment violation. Who likes that? That's a conservative court. Who likes that a cop can walk up to you and say, I'm suspicious of you, which means you got to get on your knees and then on your belly. I'm going to stick handcuffs on you. I'm going to stick you in a car and not arrested. It's detained. Who likes that? That's a liberal court. How many people like it? If a dog barks, that is probable cause and you can go to jail. You think that's liberal or conservative? Nah, it's both. It's both. And everybody likes Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? Okay, she's great, right? Ruth Bader Ginsburg, okay? If you and I are driving down the road and I don't use my blinker, cop pulls us over and Will is my passenger, they can say, you get out of the car. I'm going to put you in handcuffs and put you in my car. Who likes that? Conservatives or liberals? Both. So I can go down 20 cases. They're all the same. You and I, as free individual people, would never support this Supreme Court, ever. So if you're a conservative, God bless you. If you're a liberal, God bless you. But the truth is, you are not a liberal Supreme Court justice supporter or a conservative Supreme Court justice supporter, unless it's the Second Amendment. Everything else is identical. They're all tyrants, absolute tyrants. So on June 19th, what I'm going to show you is that we elect our Congress, we elect our presidents, and the Supreme Court is appointed for life by political persuasion, by the most powerful person in the world, to the most elite person in the world. That could never have consequences, could it? And just to caveat that, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she wrote the opinion that said, Arizona versus Johnson in 2009, that says that you can be arrested and they'll call it detained if you're the passenger in a car. So that's Ruth. Scalia, everybody loves Scalia, right? Strong Second Amendment supporter. 1995, Lopez versus United States, a gun control law based on the Commerce Clause. Scalia is a constitutional guy. He's not going to use the Commerce Clause for guns. He said, not doing it. The four liberals vote for it. But Scalia and Kennedy both go, no Commerce Clause. In 2000, U.S. versus Morrison, there's a rape case and she doesn't go to school anymore. Well, that causes a commerce problem with the college, so it's interstate commerce. Scalia and Kennedy go, no, you're not using the Commerce Clause to make laws. The liberals, they love supporting laws Congress makes. They're right and the president signs. And then it comes to 2005, Gonzalez versus Reich, which is about homegrown marijuana. The liberals want to use the Commerce Clause. Scalia and Kennedy join them. They join them. They use the Commerce Clause to criminalize marijuana. Who likes that? That's the four liberals with three conservatives. That's that ruling. That's that ruling. Do you understand? Scalia, remember, your constitutional standard has nothing to do with drugs, nothing to do with marijuana. How do we make laws, and is that legally appropriate and constitutional by constitutional standard? And if it is, then we can make a law, and if not, we can't. So then how come Scalia changed his opinion when it came to marijuana and used the Commerce Clause? Because he's an authoritarian and he doesn't like marijuana. I don't like any of them, so I don't want to sound ugly here, but I just don't like any of them, none of them. They're all horrific. John Harlan was amazing. William Douglas was pretty good. Sotomayor is actually pretty good. William Rehnquist, consistent. The Burger Court from 1969 till 1986, pure garbage. If you don't believe me, go on to Wikipedia right now, and everybody's, oh, no, Wikipedia. Get over it. Wikipedia is a site with a ton of information, and then take the information and research it 40 different ways. But go on Wikipedia and look up Burger, read his Wikipedia page and see what he did. He is total slime. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to lay out for you how we vote for Congress, we vote for president, and then the Supreme – so Congress writes the laws, and then the president signs the law into effect. And then the Supreme Court, what they do is they decide which is constitutionally can pass the muster. And historically, what they have done
– let's start there. I'm sorry to interrupt. But this whole idea that the Supreme – to me – and this, let's use this kind of as a starting point, and you can jump ahead where as far as you want. But the whole idea that the Supreme Court has this judicial review, or they somehow are the arbiters or determiners of what is and what is not constitutional, didn't happen until Marbury versus Madison. And I believe that they just unconstitutionally took that power. That's not written anywhere in the Constitution for them to have that power. And the writers of the Constitution made it very clear so that the average Joe back in the 1700s would be able to understand this. It's a pretty simplistic document. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. You have freedom of speech. So ever since that happened, in my opinion, the Supreme Court just like that. Then that's just like a power, unconstitutional power they took upon themselves, which was never checked. What's your thought on that? And then please continue.
Well, you're kind of contorting a little bit, and let me explain what I mean. So, judicial review gives the Supreme Court and Congress the chance to go back, read the dissenting opinions, and review the case. Martin versus Hunter's Lisi in 1816. That's the case where the Supreme Court said, "We are the arbitrator of constitutional rights." Judicial review, number one, it's hardly ever used. It should be used far more. And then number two, the real power the Supreme Court took was in 1816. Judicial review was passed in 1803, I think it was. And then 1816, they in Martin versus Hunter Lacy, the state, I don't want to misspeak, but it was one of the southern states that was having their land confiscated by the federal government. And so they sued in state court. And then the federal court said, no. That's a constitutional right because you have a right to property by your constitutional rights. And so that is a Supreme Court case. We are the arbitrators of civil rights. Now, this happens in 1816. And then you got in 1820, you have the Missouri Compromise that pretty much splits America in half. The lower half is slave states and the upper half is free. And most of the northern states had ended slavery before 1800. I think only New Jersey was like 1809 or 1806 or something. So Martin versus Hunter's Lacy is really the case that made the Supreme Court be the arbitrators of constitutional rights. But what they do instead is strip us of our rights continuously every single case. So the Dred Scott case happens in 1857, which causes the Civil War. In 1857, when Dred Scott is told that he's property and he is not a man and can never be a man, right? Then John Brown goes into Bleeding Kansas and kills 5 slave families. And those are the first shots of the Civil War in 1857. And then John Brown goes to the Virginia Armory and attacks it. And this is the beginning of the Civil War. To answer your question about Marbury versus Madison, if we used judicial review more and there was more cases that I had researched, I may be able to give you a better answer. But I do know that the case they took power was Martin versus Hunter's Lacy. That's where they took the powers away from the state, an unenumerated power, and they took it for the federal government. So you know, but look, all throughout history, and what this timeline piece is going to show you guys on June 19th, it's a gigantic wall. I think I have a picture on my Instagram, but it's a huge wall. And what it shows is that the elected Congress gives us amendments in the 13th, 14th, and 15th, 1865 to 1870, and then the Supreme Court passes the Slaughterhouse cases, which takes away the 13th Amendment, Reese versus United States, which takes away your 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection, and then Cruikshank, which Reese ends the Voting Rights Act of the 15th Amendment, and then Cruikshank ends the 14th Amendment. So, and that all happens in 1876, 1873. They take away all your rights, and then that causes absolute tyranny for 100 years, and then those laws are recreated through the 1964 Civil Rights Act, 1965 Voting Rights Act, and the 1968 Civil Rights Act. So, you know, we have a major problem called the Supreme Court, and a lot of conservatives right now, you know, politically conservative people are like, oh, don't pack the court. Let me just say something. The solution is to slam dunk the court. I've got it on my wall right here. I should take a picture and put it on Instagram so you can see it. I recommend from my life study on the Supreme Court that we break the Supreme Court up into 6 districts and there's 7 judges in each district. And we break up those 9 tyrants and we put them all over the 6 districts. And then we elect 45 new judges that have to run on what they're going to do for our constitutional rights, because the Supreme Court we have now has been supreme tyranny, and we need to elect new. Let me explain to you conservatives just really clearly. What does the Supreme Court hear? Cases about our rights, your rights and my rights, meaning our civil liberties, not civil rights. Civil liberties are what we're born with. Those are supreme. That's from God. God gave us these rights. That's why all the verbs in the first 10 commandments shall not be infringed. In other words, in the future, shall not be abridged in the future. And you can get this stuff from Noah Feldman, Harvard professor. I've listened to all of his lectures. Okay. Noah Feldman, brilliant guy, puts his politics in front of his position, and that then discredits him as a liberal. So does Ian Millhiser, who also knows that the Supreme Court is the tyranny in our country. I'm looking for a hardcore righty who also understands the same things that I do. Unless we pack this court of elected judges, and by the way, we didn't vote for senators until 1913. We have 150 years of not voting for senators until 1913. So what happened? What happened was there was so much disgusting tyranny and backroom pork deals that the people began to revolt and said, we will no longer accept not electing senators. So they passed the 17th Amendment in 1913. And that is what made us be able to elect senators. And just so you know, if you had asked somebody about alcohol in 1929, being illegal for 9 years now, and 2 Supreme Court cases, both Olmstead and Sullivan had been decided based, and they said, Supreme Court both said, alcohol is illegal. If you'd asked someone in 29, they would have told you, alcohol is illegal forever. You're never going to be able to do it. The same thing I hear from adults today. We're never going to get the Supreme Court elected. We're never going to overturn Terry v. Ohio. Well, you know, then get off my boat. I would rather fill it with 15-year-olds who will actually change these things in 10, 15 years. You know, we have to come together as both conservatives and liberals to understand that this court is not on either of our sides. Civil liberties are what we're born with, and these guys are taking them away from us in droves. And sadly, the liberals trying to take our Second Amendment gun rights, nothing makes my blood boil more. Nothing. Because if you're not familiar with the 1994 crime bill, Joe Biden's crime bill, there's two different sections of it. One is called COPS, Community-Oriented Policing Services. I don't know about you, but I don't know anything about that. But the title of it, what that does is that attaches to the Judd Advocate General Fund. And since 1994, all a police station has to do in Minnesota or Portland or New York or Florida is call the Judd Advocate General Fund and say, we need more cops. Then the Judd Advocate General Fund has put $30 billion into new cops. So then as they create new cops, they want to strip our gun rights. Well, let me tell you something. I'm of Jewish descent. And what happened in Israel was first they started the propaganda. Then they stripped the guns. Then Hitler came. Then Hitler came. When the German Jews were unarmed and they had created this nationalism. Does this sound familiar to you? Does this sound what's going on in our country now? Right? And so we have to fight for our gun rights with every ounce of our being. Every single gun law created was based on racism. So whether you support black people and their rights or not, just understand that the 1911 Sullivan Act was when all the Southern blacks were moving into New York City. Tim Sullivan then gave your civil liberties, the rights that God gave to you, he gave them to the police. And if you wanted to carry a gun in New York, you had to get permission from the police jury, the head of the police jury, literally giving your civil liberties to the police. So, you know, the reason I'm here now is because we're at the tipping point. We're at the tipping point. Plessy versus Ferguson took 58 years to overturn. And then what's going on now? What's going on now is Terry versus Ohio has been in effect for 53 years. We are 54 years now, 53. We're on the verge of everybody's listening. The number one problem in our country today is Terry v. Ohio. There's no bigger problem. Cops will walk up to you and say, get on your knees because I'm suspicious of you. And Earl Warren passed that in 1968 because he was going to be impeached by the police. He did it for himself. Just like all of these things are based on human error. Like you said, a judicial review. I like to think that they realized that they were flawed. I like to think that, right? But the truth is, it is probably not. So the reason why this dissertation is aimed at high school kids and college kids is because it takes a lifetime to change the Supreme Court. In 1883, Pace versus Alabama criminalized interracial relationships, not just interracial dating, interracial relationships. Because in 1883, when Orlando Pace was living with Mary Cox, they were both charged with crimes and put in prison for years. And then that crime that they said interracial dating is in 1883 wasn't overturned until 1967 in Loving versus Virginia. That's how long it takes. So I'm going to be dead. I'll be dead before these things happen, right? And then, you know, and since we're on the hardcore red pill, listen, here's the thing. The Voting Rights Act mattered. It still does matter. You know, and if we're really so concerned about voter fraud, then we should have a federal decree. And why a federal decree? So on my wall here is every single one of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's cases. I've read every one of them, okay? Because everybody was celebrating her and I really don't like her, right? So I read all of her cases, every single one of them, okay? And what I found out, she voted in a case called United States versus Alaska. And I'm from Alaska. So I started to go, well, you know, why did she say that the federal government gets the land around the marine layer of Alaska? And I was really pissed off about it. And I walked around for a few days pissed off. And then I listened to a guy named Eric Foner, F-O-N-E-R. He's on YouTube. He's probably the premier historian in America. And I listened to him speak. And he said that the reason why we create federal laws is because once the federal law is written, then it's supreme. It cannot be superseded. And the reason why we have to have federal laws for voting is because it's supreme. In other words, you can be in Oregon, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alaska, it doesn't matter where you are. And if there's a federal law that says there has to be this many voting booths, they have to be open, you can't inhibit anybody in any way, then what that means is it's open for voting. So go back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She ruled against Alaska and she gave power to the Fed and it pissed me off, right? So But what I found out over time after studying this for two decades was that the only way you and I, conservatives or liberals, have ever been free was by federal decree. We are free today because of our 10 constitutional rights that were established in 1776 and put into law in 1789. That's why we're free, because of federal laws. Now, I don't love laws at all, but what I do love is freedom. I do love liberty. And so when we give this dissertation on June 19th, I'm going to suggest several changes to policing and several changes to the Supreme Court. Several. And the sad part for me is that as I listen to elites from Harvard, Princeton, Columbia, and I just watch their lectures all day, they all know what's going on and they don't care because it doesn't affect them. If you don't have any money, then it affects you. This is not a black and white issue. This is a money issue. If you don't have any money, the police will railroad you. That's a simple fact. And then there's no checks and balances on police. So there's three founding fathers who are not American. Their ideas were stolen by a guy named James Madison, who was a slave owner. Okay, a guy named John Locke, born in 1632, died in 1704. He wrote the theory of natural law. Natural law says, I have a right to property. I have a right to freedom. I have a right to due process. These are rights that I have, right? So this happens, and then a guy follows him named Montesquieu. Montesquieu lives from 1655 until 1736. And what happens with him is he says checks and balances. If we don't have checks and balances, then we're never going to have liberty. And James Madison even has a quote that says, ambition has to be meant to counteract ambition, checks and balances, right? And then comes a guy named Jean-Jacques Rousseau. And he actually pins a full book called Checks and Balances. And from this is what James Madison writes the Constitution on. From this guy, from Jean-Jacques Rousseau. And his philosophy is that human beings are all beautiful, wonderful creatures. That the way we become corrupt, there is no such thing as morality. When you have to seek out warmth, shelter, and food, you're going to do things that are corrupted because it's such an important process for you to live. So these are our true founding fathers that based their philosophies off the Magna Carta from 1512. So now that we know the number one philosophy of America is liberty, and then when you look at the president, there's dozens of checks and balances. On Congress, dozens of checks and balances. But then on the street, the guy who can put you in cuffs and take you away, there's nobody there to go, wait, why are you taking Will to jail? Well, you know, he's smoking a cigarette and blew it in my face. Okay, he's a dick. I don't need you to take him to jail. I need you to look for a criminal out here. And what happened is we have no checks and balances. And Earl Warren, because he had to throw him a bone, passed Terry v. Ohio. So every law after Terry v. Ohio, I wish you guys see, I guess on video so you could see this. But so the Supreme Court of Rosters from the inception of the Supreme Court from 1789 until 1964, what they did is they made sure that your constitutional rights could not be applied. Ruling after ruling after ruling after ruling, whether it be Corrigan versus Buckley, Buck versus Bell, Shiznick versus United States, Lum versus Rice, Giles versus Teasley, you name a case, Bad Elk versus United States, horrible, okay? That is the resisting arrest charge. So these roster of Supreme Court judges from the beginning until 1964, they said, we can't apply your rights. Sorry. We can't make the states apply your natural rights, and we can't make individuals not discriminate against you. Sorry, right? But what happens in 64 is blacks are finally freed in 1954. So you have 10 years of this crazy, crazy unrest. I mean, crazy. So then in 64, the Supreme Court says, no, okay, enough of this. Civil rights. Civil rights are not civil liberties. They're civil rights. We're going to protect the class of black people who have no food, no money, nowhere to live, literally nowhere to live because of Corrigan versus Buckley. No equity. And so they passed the Civil Rights of 64. And then now blacks are freed. But now what happened is the Supreme Court, they're so used to being tyrannical that they don't know what to do. So in 68, in Terry versus Ohio, they're sold this bit of goods that this low-level knuckle-dragger named Darren McFadden preemptively stops John Terry from doing a stick-up. If you listen to oral arguments, they're on my YouTube page called Delete Laws with a Z. Delete Laws with a Z. Go to my YouTube page and listen to the Terry v. Ohio oral arguments. You have to buy that a knuckle-dragger named McFadden was able to predict that these guys were about to do a stick-up. So what does the Supreme Court do? They go, all cops can predict stick-ups. All cops can predict whether you're about to commit a crime or not. And the exact same horrific story that happens to John Terry now happens to all of us every day in America. The number one cop interaction with you is a Terry stop. We overturn Terry, and that ends 9 out of 10 police stops. 9 out of 10. That's amazing, right? So now I told you, the Supreme Court was not the arbiter of our civil rights. All the way to 64, they made sure you couldn't get your rights. In 68, what they do is they become the arbitrator of officer safety. I swear to God. They literally create a caveat in your civil liberty of your Fourth Amendment right, which ends your Fourth Amendment, that says it's a small intrusion into your civil liberties to stop and be detained for an officer, for officer safety. Now, every law they pass after 1968 is going to be based on officer safety. So Kerr versus California is a no-knock raid. It's a law from 1963. Kerr, K-E-R, versus California. That case allows police to just enter your house. It's based on common law from 1650. 1650 common law said that police could knock and announce and walk into your house. Well, Kerr versus California, maybe you've seen TV shows or you've experienced it yourself where they go, bang, 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 police, and they just go running in, right? So that was Kerr versus California. That was before Terry v. Ohio in 68. What's the difference between Kerr versus California and Wilson versus Arkansas in 1995? In 1963, they had to knock and announce before they entered Breonna Taylor's home. In 1995, in Wilson versus Arkansas, that was a ruling for the people that said police cannot no-knock raid your home. They can't do that. That's unconstitutional. Unless officer safety is in question. And that's what they did to Breonna Taylor. They no-knock raided her home. No announcement, no knock, no nothing. Kicked the door open. Her boyfriend started shooting, and she got murdered. But that's the difference between before Terry and after Terry. And pretty much every single person on my wall here, I'll take a picture and put it on Instagram for anybody who wants to see it. Every head that I have on this wall here that died pretty much filters through Terry versus Ohio. Because what that does is mutes your civil liberties in the name of officer safety. So what happens in 68 is, before 68, if you got arrested, they'd put handcuffs on in front of you, or they'd be like, okay, come with me, Will. You got to come, you're under arrest. And you would just walk with them to the car. Sometimes they didn't even put you in the back seat. As soon as the Supreme Court did what's called judicial activism, and they created legislation through a Supreme Court ruling called the Terry Stop,
Well, we're going to get back to that on the next side. We also got some clips, and we're going to get to your calls on the other side. This is the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show. V's got the night off. Fake Mike is in the house with Chile DeCastro, Hollywood producer. We'll be right back, folks.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.